British journalist Toby Young often refers to himself as a hack. He is the son of Michael Young, a Labour Party intellectual who coined the term meritocracy and whose book on the subject was required reading for many of us over 50. But Toby Young found the intelligentsia of England boring. He began editing the magazine The Modern Review, subtitled Low Culture for Highbrows. In 1995, he took a job in New York City as a contributing editor to the Condé Nast-owned Vanity Fair. He failed miserably. He has written a book about his experience at Vanity Fair. It's called How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. In it, he says, going to work in New York was a dream come true.
You know, I'd been brought up on movies like His Girl Friday and The Philadelphia Story. And rather naively, I was expecting to find kind of these knockabout cynics who were kind of completely embittered about having to write these fawning, sycophantic profiles of people like Sandra Bullock, and who would kind of retire to the nearest bar after work and trade wisecracks between sips of martinis. But actually, it wasn't a bit like that. I remember my first day at the magazine, walking down the magazine's corridor, I saw these journalists crouched over their computer screens as if they were devising the Marshall Plan or something, rather than, you know, putting out an upscale supermarket tabloid. And it really wasn't the kind of funhouse atmosphere I was expecting.
Now, one reviewer described your book like this: Young's view of Condé Nast is a hellhole of vicious backstabbing, shameless status grabbing, and he used some other words that we can't say on the radio, and that's just the morning elevator ride. How hierarchical is this organization?
It's extremely hierarchical. I think many English people come to New York expecting New York to be much less hierarchical than London, when in fact it's much more. I'll give you an example. On the first day that I arrived, Graydon Carter, the editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair, had me into his office and he said, Toby, you're working for Vanity Fair, you got an office on Madison Avenue, you're running the big bucks, you think you're the cat's pajamas, but let me tell you something, you're in the first room. Said, after 6 months, maybe a year, you'll discover a discreet doorway at the back of the first room, leads to the second room. I'm in the seventh, you're in the first, and don't you forget it.
And you made it into the second, right?
No, I never made it past the first. I'll tell you why I never made it past the first. Whenever I proposed an idea to Graydon just after I'd arrived, he'd say, it's good, Toby, but it's first room stuff. His other way of dismissing an idea was, it's a dog whistle. You can hear it, I can't.
But, you know, you were provocative. I mean, I look at some of the stories that you give in the book. For example, you give this example of your interview with Nathan Lane, in which you ask him right up front, you know, are you Jewish? Are you gay?
Well, in that particular instance, I'd been allocated so brief a window in which to conduct this interview that I thought I had to get the important questions kind of out there as soon as I could. When I asked him whether he was Jewish, he said, yes, yes, what of it? Move on, next question. And then we moved on to, I said, you've often played gay characters. You're playing a gay character in The Birdcage, which is why I'm interviewing you. You did the voiceover for Timon in The Lion King, generally considered Disney's first ever gay animated character. Are you homosexual? And, you know, his jaw hit the floor, and then he just got up and walked away. And then his publicist, who was kind of hovering in the background, came up to me and said, would you please leave? You're making Mr. Lane uncomfortable. I then went back to the Vanity Fair office. I was hauled into Graydon Carter's office, and he said, what were you thinking? You can't ask Hollywood celebrities whether they're Jewish or gay. In future, just assume they're both Jewish and gay, okay?
Why did you assume that these people, that supermodels, let's say, that people who write for a fashion magazine would be interesting?
I guess, that's a tough question. That's a tough question to answer. I think I'm guilty of slightly exaggerating how wide-eyed I was about this world so I could make my kind of disillusionment after the 5 years I'd spent in it seem more dramatic. But, I think growing up in London, like many people growing up outside of New York, you have this illusion that leading the life in this city, the center of the world, the Rome of the modern era, cruising around in limousines, kind of hanging out with supermodels, going to these great parties, that it'll be fabulous. That you'll have a fantastic time. You know, this is what we dream about as we trudge down our windswept suites in kind of London suburbs. It's being in this kind of this fabulous 24-hour party. And okay, it wasn't like that, but at least, I'm not the only one who has that fantasy.
One of the things that I found fascinating about your book is that you sprinkle a lot of Alexis de Tocqueville in it. Alexis de Tocqueville wrote Democracy in America, 1835. Actually, he wrote the second volume 5 years later. I gather it was his writing about American conformity that struck you.
Yes, I was at Harvard as a Fulbright Award holder from 87 to 88 at the height of the political correctness epidemic, which was omnipresent in Ivy League schools at that period. And I was astonished by how little intellectual diversity there was, even in the government department at Harvard. I mean, there was kind of more diversity in my college at Oxford, at Brasenose College. I mean, there were kind of hard right, kind of almost fascists, and these kind of revolutionary communists all within this fairly small tutorial group in my particular class. Whereas at Harvard, the kind of extent of political disagreement was really over kind of two different kinds of liberalism. It was the big debate of the day. And it wasn't until I read Tocqueville that I realized that the absence of any real intellectual dissent from the principles on which America was founded had long been a characteristic of American society. And it's something I encountered again working as a journalist in New York in the 90s. I mean, I was expecting people to be much more cynical about their profession. I wasn't expecting them to kind of have so much respect for celebrities, for the entertainment industry, to be so willing to do the bidding of publicists. I was expecting them to have a little more spirit, a little more fight. But this seemed to be a great example of what Tocqueville diagnosed as mild despotism, the tyranny of the majority. When a majority of people agree that something's good, there really is very little dissent in a democratic society.
But you yourself started out loving this culture, loving pop culture, as a kind of rebellion, I guess, against the kind of elite intellectual British culture that you were brought up in.
That's right. I was brought up in this kind of very literary Bloomsbury-esque atmosphere. And, you know, attending the Vanity Fair Oscar party would have been my parents' idea of hell. But after I'd been in New York for 5 years, I realized that whilst these values might have seemed very sexy, kind of in contrast to the rather kind of stuffy puritanical values I'd been brought up with, when you remove that context, when that was all there was, when there was nothing kind of rebellious about embracing this trashy world, it actually seemed pretty worthless.
So now, what's next?
My tentative plan is to move to LA next year with my wife, try and make it in Hollywood.
You thought New York was bad. Oh my God, you are going to be in for a lot.
Well, that's the plan. And when I inevitably screw up, I can then write a sequel to this book about screwing up on the West Coast, you know, How to Lose Friends and Alienate People Too.
Thanks, Toby, for coming and sharing all of these stories.
Thank you.
Toby Young is the author of How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. He joined us from our London bureau.